He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Caught by Boston College. I don't believe it. It's a touchdown. The Eagles win it.
And the kick is blocked. Appalachian State has stunned the college football world. James, the lateral.
Chris Davis takes it at the back of the end zone. He'll run it out to the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Welcome to the Big 12 / Partial Conference USA preview edition of Walk On Red Shirts podcast. As always, I am your host, Aaron, and with me, my co-hosts, Jake and intern Gibble. Off the top, as I just said, we'll be previewing the Big 12, running through that conference, making some predictions on there, and then tackling a few things in the Conference USA. If you felt like our last episode was a bit long with the American Athletic Conference, don't feel too bad. We will be not spending a ton of time on Conference USA. I don't feel like enough people care too much about it to spend an hour on them. So we'll touch on them lightly. And off the top, intern Gibble will get us into some news. But other than that, how are you guys doing?
So returning to work, I forgot how dumb people can be. So to give a little context, so I work in rec sports. Do you know that people brawl in adult slow pitch softball? Like, they throw hands at each other over dumb things.
Why wouldn't they?
Like, our lowest level of rec softball, we had a brawl last night where a dude got blindside punched in the back of the head.
Oh, boy. Like, you got some, you got LeGarrette Blount out there playing.
You want to know what started it? No, surprisingly, it wasn't that. No, a guy didn't slide into a base.
Well, that's some shitty effort. I punch him in the back of the head, too.
So it was a brawl where somebody actually brought a bat out. And I was like, you guys are all idiots. I hope you all get suspended and kicked out.
Do they play for like a trophy?
Yeah, it costs about $12.
Do they pay into this, or is this like a free thing?
Oh, yeah, they pay into it.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, I can't fault them then.
You just got to throw hands, I guess, if you're mad enough about it.
Yeah, they're playing for a $12 trophy.
Yeah, what exactly are they paying for if you guys aren't supplying a good trophy?
I mean, it is a good trophy. We just buy so many of them, they're down to $12.
Oh, okay. Well,
we buy like 300 trophies a year from them.
Lord, how many damn sport things are you guys doing?
Do you get them? 1,200 softball teams.
Jesus,
we do a lot of softball.
Man, not having a professional sports team in that town really.
What are you talking about? We got hockey.
Yeah, like I said, not having a professional sports team in that town.
Really. I know, we only have one, and then we have the Ohio State, and then we have an attempt at a soccer team.
I mean, Ohio State, I guess, in fairness, is a professional football team in a sense. I mean, they just get paid in tattoos. I mean,
they probably get paid too. Let's be real.
I mean, most teams are. But apologies again to the Blue Jackets. I don't want to get on John Tortorella's bad side here.
Yeah, he'll go and rant about you. Don't worry, Blue Jackets. We're going to win the cup starting in
a cannon.
We do have a cannon.
I mean, I'm sort of rooting for them since my Ducks were one of the three teams that didn't make the playoffs or the bubble or whatever you're calling it.
Or we lose in the first round and get the first overall pick. Either way, steal.
That's also a good way to do it. Gotta love hockey.
That's probably enough hockey talk for this podcast.
Yeah, more than likely. Intern Gibble, what about you? What's up with you?
Yeah, I mean, we're back in Hershey Park. That's about it. People are just as unsmart there as they are in rec sports, but
you're not smart either.
Well, you're not wrong.
I know. That's why I said it.
But yeah. Okay. There's really nothing going on there.
Nothing ever in my life. So just take us to the news.
Okay. Well, we'll start off with some bad news, because why not? The Colonial Athletic Association, they decided to cancel their football season because of the coronavirus pandemic. However, the 12 members of the conference are allowed to pursue independent schedules. So, like, this is the conference that James Madison is in. So they're allowed to, like, make their own schedule, essentially, even though the conference isn't going to have one for them. So that's pretty fun. Meanwhile, the Mideastern Athletic Conference, the Patriot League, and A-10 all suspended their fall sports indefinitely because of ongoing, because of the pandemic as well. They haven't determined whether or not their fall schedules are going to be moved to the spring yet or not. But it's basically the same thing as the Ivy League. Those three are all kind of doing the same thing there. Do you guys think that the big conferences are about to follow this, or you think this is just staying to the small FCS schools?
This is just FCS, and it makes sense. I mean, these are schools that don't make a ton of money. James Madison already said they're obviously, like you said, they're going to try and sort out a schedule, which makes sense. I mean, they're a pretty dominant FCS school, so if they can keep their options open to play and maybe schedule a couple games to travel close by and make $1 million or so along the way to play a season and stuff like that, I think that's a good sign for them. But the smaller schools, especially ones that might not be all that competitive, it makes sense. I mean, these schools don't rake in a ton of money from football outside of making these big trips. And if, Power Five schools or even Group of Five schools aren't bringing in FCS teams and paying those, then there's not really a point to playing. So,
yeah, I agree with Folsom there. Like, the FCS programs, like, they're going to lose money because if they're not getting their bye games, if they're just playing conference games, they don't really have TV deals. They don't get much sponsorship money. They don't really get too much other cash. So it'll be hard for them to generate the revenue just to put the teams on the field. So I think this is a way that they realize that if there is a season, it's going to be in a limited fashion. So it's going to be harder for them to make money, where this is just a revenue point at this point.
Yeah, it could almost help them if they switch to the spring and, the Power Five stay in the fall, then they might get a little bit more TV time in the spring just because there might not be much else on.
My thought with that is, though, the FCS and whatnot will have about the same attraction as, or potentially even less than, like an XFL or AAF, because at least there's names to recognize with those two. You know, at least in like the XFL, you have, guys who played in the NFL or guys that were high level college players. I don't know if you're going to get as much of the attraction if a random fan is trying to watch, James Madison versus, random other FCS team.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they'd be getting a ton of viewers, but they have a better chance of getting viewers in the spring than they do in the fall. That's basically the point there. But, all right, moving on to Tennessee. Defensive lineman Emmett Gooden, who was featured on the Netflix series Last Chance U, was dismissed from the team following an arrest on Thursday. There was a felony charge of aggravated domestic assault. He was accused of hitting his girlfriend with a glass jar candle during an argument. Gooden was a senior and was projected to be one of the anchors to Tennessee's defensive line after he missed the 2019 season with an ACL injury. In 2018, he made 33 tackles, including 7 tackles for a loss, as a backup for the Volunteers. Not a great life decision by this guy. But yeah, what are you going to do? Hopefully he can turn his life around a little bit. In a little bit more COVID-related news, Indiana paused their voluntary workouts after they had some positive tests in the team. Meanwhile, Ohio State has resumed their voluntary workouts after taking a little less than a week off after their positive tests. In the SEC, they announced that any athletes who choose not to play fall sports because of health and safety concerns surrounding COVID will have their scholarships honored. The league announced that today, actually, Friday. This decision is the same one made by the Big Ten and Pac-12 as well. Definitely a good thing to see out of these conferences, showing that their athletes are still student athletes and they're still giving them their scholarships, which allow them to learn at the universities they're supposed to be attending for learning. So something good to see there.
To double back on the COVID voluntary workouts, Miami also paused theirs after first couple tests came back positive for a few players. Not releasing names or anything like that, obviously, but so they're also in that. They don't think that the number is going to grow much, which would be a miracle considering where they are, being in the hotbed for it. But also wanted to add that in there.
Gotcha. All right. The Texas is planning to rename Jamail Field at Darrell K. Royal Texas Memorial Stadium. They're going to change it to honor Earl Campbell and Ricky Williams, both Heisman winners for the university. They're also going to be putting up a statue for San Antonio native Julius Whittier, the Texas Longhorns' first black football letterman at the stadium. I got it, I think.
Why didn't you just read exactly what you had written down there?
Well, because I didn't want to.
For the people listening, it says the university also erect a statue, and Gibble didn't read that.
No, they're putting up a statue. Same thing. Side note,
Folsom, did you just pour yourself a glass of whiskey?
Yes, I did. Screwball.
What are we drinking tonight?
Screwball.
Screwball?
Okay. After I just had a Baltimore Blonde Guinness Ale from the Baltimore Brewery, which is fantastic. Highly recommend.
I'm drinking a Bikes Lemonade Shanty from Funk's Brewery in E-Town.
Drinking a nice glass of water?
Of course you are.
Fucking
Forever devil, 12.
Man. Yeah. I just didn't think to grab a beer before this.
Amateur.
Never thinking.
Here.
That's always
Keep
your problem.
Going.
I know. Anyway, the NCAA has kind of issued guidelines to help schools navigate the return to fall sports this year. Their main point was testing 72 hours prior to all games and pretty much all contact activities. The American Athletic Conference already announced that they're going to be doing that. But the NCAA didn't really like, they kind of set up guidelines, but it was still each conference just decides what they want to do.
The NCAA is still half-assing the entire thing.
Yeah, basically that's what they're doing. They got together with, I don't know, every medical agency. I'm not about to read off all these names. There's just like a dozen medical associations and groups that they allegedly worked with to come up with these recommendations that just say, well, we're going to keep testing, wear masks, isolate if you can, we're going to watch everybody. That's about it.
Yeah. If you haven't gotten a chance, we're recording this on Friday. This will be out obviously Monday, but if you get a chance, go back and watch Paul Feinbaum on Get Up tearing Mark Emmert to shreds. I don't agree with Paul Feinbaum on a lot of things, but I mean, it was a really good rant by him on the basically Emmert just needs to be fired and they need to get rid of him as soon as possible. Because, yeah, I mean, there's no leadership. I mean, that's point blank.
Shocking.
Yeah, if they're not going to do more than say, just test a little bit, like, no. Nothing's going to succeed if that's your approach.
Like this, like, the NCAA is so fast to suspend a kid for taking $10. They will turn around within 5 minutes of that kid accepting that money and shit can him. And this, they're just nowhere to be seen.
Well, that's just like, spoiler, JT Daniels got his waiver when he went into the portal, I don't know, 2 months ago. Joey Gatewood went into the portal and went to Kentucky back in January and still hasn't gotten heard if he's getting a waiver or not.
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a few guys still waiting on waiver requests. That
who knows when they're going to be January or February.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, is your name notable? Okay, here's a waiver.
Are you transferring to a Power 5 contender? Yes or no? If your answer is no, you're not getting your waiver.
Yeah, whoa, pretty much.
Don't be taking shots at Kentucky like that, man. It's a fine program.
It's a fine program. That's about the rest, I'll say.
All right. Keep going. Moving on here. The Rose Bowl parade, unfortunately, is going to be canceled for the first time since World War II due to coronavirus.
We're not sure if there'll be a Rose Bowl.
Well, we don't want to talk about that, but yeah. And our last bit of news here, the college football teams are allowed to count two games against qualifying FCS teams towards their bowl eligibility during this upcoming season. The NCAA D1 Council announced this past Wednesday. They did not adjust the requirement to have a winning season or have a 500 or above season. So you can, if you have a 10 game schedule, you can go 5-5 and still get into a bowl this year.
I like that's what they're concerned about. Not that there's a global pandemic, but you can play two FCS teams this year.
Right. Because that's important.
James Madison says hello.
North Dakota State saying, come at me. We'll go anywhere you want.
Have players. We'll travel.
We'll accept any money you're willing to offer.
Put that million in the bank, guys. We'll go wherever we need.
On a different note, real quick, talking about that.
Yeah, that's smart.
I did see that the MAC is expecting the Big Ten to at least pay or give some of the payments in all those bye games. So, you know, Ohio State was supposed to play Buffalo and Bowling Green, Michigan State, all of the Penn State, I think, was supposed to play Kent State. I think in total there was 18 games scheduled against MAC opponents that were bye games. And I believe the MAC is expecting them to, based on conversations, maybe not give all the money, but at least give portions based on contracts. So I guess we'll see how that plays out. There was discussions that people were asking if they would just get the money and play at a later date, but that also hurts the MAC because then they're getting the money now. They're not getting the money when they'd have their bye games in the future. I think the best situation is probably just essentially buy out the contract and then schedule again at a later date, even though most of these teams aren't free for another 24 years.
Yeah, they kind of need that to stay afloat right now. Like if the MAC wants to stay alive, they're going to need some help.
It's a catch-22. You can either take the money now, but then you won't get it later, so you need to be able to make the money up in the future, or you cannot take the money now and you're going to be hurting, but you'll get the money, you know, in 2026 when you play again.
Yeah. All right. Well, that wraps up the news.
Woo. Hey, Gibble.
Yeah.
You like t-shirts?
I do.
Run do you them like often. Long sleeve shirts?
Ooh, I really do.
I know. You're a big long sleeve shirt fan. What's your favorite sport?
Obviously college football.
Okay. I thought you were going to say soccer for a moment.
No, it's a fun one, but
soccer's college football. Soccer probably your second?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So what if I told you that every month you could get a different shirt with different sports and different varieties? You can get t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, polos. You know, you never know what you're going to get. Would that be interesting to you?
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. Well, with Athletic Tea Club, you can get a different shirt every month. And it's really simple. It's a monthly subscription box. All you do is you go on there, you pick your size of your shirt you're going to want. You pick your preferences and you pick your favorite sport, and you can change it whenever you want, and use promo code REDSHIRTS and you get 10% off your next subscription. Sounds simple enough?
Definitely easy.
Yeah, so I expect you to sign up because I've been telling you for weeks and you're going to finally do it.
Sure, I will.
As soon as we're done recording here, intern Gibble's going to sign up and get himself some t-shirts every month.
Love it.
Exactly, because he needs a new wardrobe for sure.
Well, yeah.
If he gets any more, in fairness though, if he gets any more shirts, he's going to have to do laundry every day instead of every other day. So,
yeah, intern Gibble does laundry every 3 days already.
That's not quite accurate. It's like 5.
Nothing Gibble likes doing more than wasting water everywhere he goes.
We could have a water bill one day and it gets racked up like $300 every 3 months because you spend that much water doing your laundry and taking 3 hour showers.
Yep.
All right. Let's move on. Let's get into the Big 12. We'll save Conference USA for last because we know everybody's clamoring for that. Same as last week, we'll run down alphabetic order, do our predictions towards the end. Any Heisman contenders as well we'll throw in there along the way. So let's kickstart things off with a very interesting team off the bat. A whole new staff down in Waco for the Baylor Bears. They went 11-3 last season, a great year under Matt Rhule, who now leaves to go be the head coach of the Carolina Panthers. Dave Aranda, the former LSU defensive coordinator, steps in now as the new head coach. Their offensive coordinator is Larry Fedora, the former North Carolina head coach, brings an up-tempo, high-powered offense with him over here. They have only 8 returning starters, 6 on the offensive side of the ball, only 2 on defense. Last season, they ranked 52nd in total offense and 39 in total defense. My real question with the Baylor Bears here, how steep of a drop-off do you see the Bears having in 2020?
Well, today I learned Larry Fedora is the offensive coordinator at Baylor. I actually have no idea where he was.
I don't remember where he was before this either.
No clue. Anyways, there's going to be a drop-off. They bring back Tyquan Thornton, who had 45 catches for nearly 800 yards and 5 touchdowns last year. But they were last in sacks the last 2 years in the Big 12, and they only returned 2 starters on defense. That doesn't really bode for a good recipe for them to have a good pass rush. So in a conference that's very offense heavy and you need to get to the quarterback, I think the defense is going to struggle. Granted, Dave Aranda is a good defensive coach, but I think the first year is just going to be too steep for them to get back to where they were. I mean, I think 7 or 8 wins in a full 12-game schedule is realistic. I'm not sure you see them get to the double digits, though.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely don't see them getting to double-digit wins again this year. A lot of their games last year, if I remember right, were really close wins. I feel like those games this year are going to go the other way for them. If they're able to keep them close, I think they're going to fall the other way and they're going to lose a couple more of those. It helps that they have Charlie Brewer and John Lovett back. But I don't think that's quite enough. I think offensively they should still be all right. Fun fact, Larry Fedora was an analyst at Texas last year and coached at North Carolina before that.
We know he coached North Carolina.
Yeah. Well,
I literally said that one. I actually do think Fedora will be an asset on the offensive side of the ball. He's also the quarterback coach, I believe, at Baylor this year, which should help Charlie Brewer. Obviously, when he was at North Carolina, Mitch Trubisky ended up going number 2 overall in the draft. Love it or leave it, however you want to look at that. But still, had some good quarterback play at North Carolina when he was there. They put up a lot of points every season for the Tar Heels. So I think that's going to add a bit more of a dynamic factor to the offense that they didn't really have under Matt Rhule. They were a bit more of a conservative team. more traditional style of offense there. So I think they are going to bode a little bit more into what you see from typical Big 12. I do think it's going to take a year before they get back to double-digit wins in a full season. I think I'm with you, Jake. I think they're down to 7-8 wins. I think they'll still be good. But they're going to have to replace a ton on defense. James Lynch was a huge cog on the defensive line. He obviously left for the NFL this past offseason. So it's going to take a little bit on the defensive side to get used to things. And in a conference where there's so many high-powered offenses, I don't see it being great right away. But I think they're going to be a fun team to watch with Fedora and Charlie Brewer out there on the offensive side of the ball. All right, let's move on to the Iowa State Cyclones. They went 7-6 last year, lost the Camping World Bowl to Notre Dame. They have 13 returning starters, 6 on offense, 7 on the defensive side. They ranked 27th in total offense and 45th in total defense last year. My question with this team, can Iowa State and Heisman frontrunner Brock Purdy challenge for the Big 12 championship this year in a conference that's largely been dominated by Oklahoma, largely presumed that Texas is back every year, and also has a couple upstart teams that could play factors in here with TCU, Oklahoma State, such and such, especially with a team that's their offense has gotten more Big 12 in the last couple of years, but traditionally is a bit more like what we've seen with Baylor in a conservative style of play.
Brock Purdy is like an above average quarterback, right? He's like adequate.
Oh, God, Jake. Jesus.
He's like adequate.
Lord have mercy on your soul.
I just wanted to see Folster's response. No, he has 21 school records at Iowa State. So obviously,
he's going to play 3 seasons, go to the NFL, and own most of the records there. The dude's top 5 in passing yards last year at a school that traditionally never has anybody in the top 50. So, I mean, he's good.
No, he'll be a borderline first round pick next year, depending on quarterback needs throughout the NFL. But you know, they only return 5 starters on offense. Their defense is what's going to be the – oh, 6, my bad. I read in 5 somewhere. They returned 9 on defense. The main thing for them last year was being able to fix the third down issue. They were 89th in third downs, but they were top 50 in virtually every other category. So if they can make that one improvement, you know, they could see some serious improvement on the defensive side of the ball. Brock Purdy will be just fine. They're going to score a lot of points. You know, they'll be probably top 3, most likely, in my opinion, in scoring on the Big 12. So the question is, will they be able to, you know, main question is that they're going to be able to beat Oklahoma and not slip up in a game, because they've shown their ability to compete with Oklahoma. They need to win and they need to not slip up anywhere.
Yeah, they basically need to do what Baylor did last year. All those tight games that Baylor pulled out, Iowa State needs to do that this year, and I feel like they bring back the guys to do it. I guess the biggest question mark is their offensive line. They bring back one starter from that, and last year they only allowed a sack on 2.6% of their offensive plays on passing downs. They were 3rd nationally and 1st in the Big 12 in those situations. So if that's a thing they can replicate, that definitely helps them on the offensive side of the ball, keeps them in a good spot to keep scoring a lot of points, keep Brock Purdy throwing that rock and keep him in the Heisman race, because he's definitely a front runner for it. But yeah.
Yeah. I think one of the big things that kind of bit Iowa State early on last season was that they just didn't have a running game. And once they kind of got rid of the, back by committee and just shifted to giving it all to Breece Hall, you started to see the offense get a lot better and more rhythmic as the season progressed. And I think Breece Hall is a very talented running back, probably one of the top few, I think, in the Big 12, and that's going to add a lot. They have one of the best tight ends in the country in Charlie Kohler. So the weapons are there, I think, on the offensive side of the ball. If Jaquan Bailey comes back from his leg injury, as the same capable starter he was before that, when he had, I think, like 18 and a half sacks, in his first few years, I think that's going to help a lot on the defensive side of the ball. I do think Iowa State can, contend. I don't think they'll win the Big 12. Shocking, I know. But I do think they can contend at least to get to the Big 12 title game, to play Oklahoma, a second time around. Cause I don't see that big of a discrepancy between this team and Texas or any of the other teams you might, put as that second team in this conference. So, yeah. And obviously, like we said, this is our first Heisman contender here in the conference is Brock Purdy. Now that we've talked about my Big 12 team, let's go ahead and talk about Jake's Big 12 team, the Kansas Jayhawks. 3-9 last year. 11 returning starters, 6 on the offensive side, 5 on defense. They ranked 90th in total offense last year. I would only guess they weren't in triple digits because of Puka Williams. And defensively, they were 122nd. So, if the Big 12 moves to a conference-only schedule, will Kansas even get one win? And if so, how many?
Yeah, they'll get a win. Duh. I don't know why it's so hard to think about. West Virginia sucks. No, West Virginia sucks.
Yeah, but I'd like them to beat Texas.
I mean, they only beat Texas last year, so don't put it past them. I mean, the question for Kansas is they lose Carter Stanley, and both their quarterbacks that are returning have a combined 1 pass attempt last year. So that's an issue. But other than that, the offense should actually be pretty good. Puka Williams is returning, and Andrew Parchman, Stephon Robinson Jr. They have playmakers on the offensive side of the ball. They just need to figure out who the quarterback is and if he's competent. So they're going to score points. They're pretty good at scoring points last year. They put over 30 points multiple times. They scored 47 against Texas. So they should be able to score. The question is going to be that defense. Les Miles, the defensive guy, it was really bad in the first year. When you look at the schedule, the games like West Virginia, Texas Tech, those are going to be games where they're going to need to try to sneak one out. Depending on how Baylor actually is this year, a TCU kind of schedule, because Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Iowa State, and Texas are going to be incredibly hard games. So they really have to look at the rest of the lower half of the Big 12 and try to steal a couple. I mean, they don't normally play in front of a lot of fans, so it might help them if there's no fans in the stands.
Would it shock you if I told you that Robinson and Parchment were the two leading receivers returning this year in the Big 12?
No, because they were listed as top 10 talent-wise in the Big 12 already.
Well, they are.
Well, plus, and like Tylan Wallace missed games last year. Oklahoma.
Charleston Rambo was the number 2 at Oklahoma.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
They need to figure out a quarterback because their two quarterbacks on the roster are combined 1 pass attempt. I forget if it was Kendrick or I think Kendrick, not Mac Vitti, was the one that actually played in 4 games last year. But it was towards the end of games. They actually blew out Boston College, so you never know what could happen.
I remember, wasn't that like Halloween?
It was like week 2 or week 3, and they beat them by like 30 points.
Yeah, and everybody thought Boston College was going to smoke them.
Yeah, it was Boston College was like a minus 17 favorite, and Kansas well covered that spread.
On the road, too. I mean,
it was like a 50-point swing.
I mean, that was a game where you were just kind of like, and it came off them losing to Coastal Carolina. So, like, it was just like, what even is Kansas? What even is Boston College? I mean, I don't know. Looking at their schedule, if they were to shift to an all-conference schedule, the biggest issue I have is similar to one of the teams we talked about in the ACC last week. all of their games against winnable opponents in conference are on the road. Kansas State, West Virginia, Texas Tech, all road games. And that does not bode well when you get the easy part of the conference and you got to travel there. I mean, Kansas State's not far, but like still it's a road game in a sense. But outside of that, obviously, I mean, they at least get Iowa State, Oklahoma State, Texas coming there, TCU as well, who we'll get to in a little bit. But it's going to be tough. I mean, Boston College is a winnable game if the ACC and the Big 12 both keep their schedules going the way they are. New Hampshire, they'll find a way to lose that game. But, I mean... Hey, shut up. Kansas, it's one of those teams that it's like they're, you know, I think Les Miles is going to get them there, but when you're so deficient, especially with, I mean, they've been dealing with like having so few scholarship players in comparison to other schools, and I think they're still trying to try and get past that deficit, that it's going to take a few years to get them back to bowl eligibility. I mean, this isn't the year. I do think, like last year with Texas Tech, I think they could squeak out a game against one or two opponents that you don't expect them to. But I don't see them winning more than four games looking at their schedule should they play a 12-game schedule.
They're going bowling this year.
Stop it.
Only at the local bowling alley. Yeah, at the local bowling alley.
Puka Williams is going to be an All-American. Watch it.
Like a Big 12 All-American?
No, no. He'll make an All-American list, probably third team, but I think he'll be an All-American this year.
Well, yeah, it'll be like third team Big 12, but yeah.
No, 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 no. Third team country. I mean, he's...
Nationally.
He's a two-time first-team All-Conference. He's made first-team All-Conference in the Big 12 twice.
You think he's going to be one of the top, like, six best running backs this year?
Yes, I do.
He's literally the only good part of Kansas's offense right now, aside from the two wide receivers.
Oh, no. Puka Williams is very good. Legal history aside, he is a very talented running back. But I do have a hard time believing he's one of the six best running backs in the country in a college football universe that has Najee Harris, Travis Etienne, Chuba Hubbard, Kylan Hill, Breece Hall, a better one in the conference, I think, and so on and so forth. I could sit here all day.
Puka Williams will be an All-American. It'll probably be a third team, and it's going to be on a list, but it's going to happen. Doesn't matter if it's just one of them, and it's like an SI All-American. Still
counts. You are literally going to post an All-American list at the end of the season, Jake, and you are going to put them on there, and you're going to come on this damn podcast, and you're going to sit there and say, I told you he was going to make an All-American team. I've called it now. I'm calling my shot on that and save this for the end of the college football year.
I kind of like that idea. I'm going to do my own All-American list at the end of the year.
We have it. But also, I mean, Kansas, obviously, they have to fix the defense. They could have beat Texas had they ever just gotten a stop on the defensive side. And they just didn't.
I can't wait till Puka Williams and Trey Sermon are first-team All-American.
That's the day the podcast died.
This guy had the audacity to go on this podcast and tell me that Brock Purdy is above average at best.
Brock Purdy's not going to make you All-American list either. Brock Williams
is one of the best running backs in the country. We're done here. Let's go to the less interesting Kansas team, the Kansas State Wildcats, who... Like Cincinnati, we talked about last week, may never be fun to watch play football. But they'll always win games. 8-5 last year, which I completely forgot that they won 8 games. I thought they didn't even go bowling before I had to read up on them.
I forgot Kansas State was a team.
I had forgotten about them that much. 7 returning starters, only 2 on the offensive side, 5 on defense. Their offense, they won 8 games last year. Their offense ranked 103rd in the country in total offense and 44th in total defense. I do not understand this team. They lost to Navy. I forget which bowl game it was. Most projections are placing Kansas State at the bottom of the Big 12. Us probably included. I know I am. Again, I forgot they even went bowling last year. Are we underestimating them again? Are they going to end up winning another seven games? Because this is a year in and year out thing where everybody just says, Kansas State, not very good. They end up going bowling somehow.
I think so this is the coaching thoughts? That Klieman is just a good enough coach. He'll figure out a way to get him to a bowl game. Because, you know, North Dakota State, you know, you're recruiting, you know, what you can. Now, you do have some pick of your guys because some guys will go there over, you know, MAC schools or potentially, you know, some other mid-major schools. But Kansas State, same thing. You're not getting the pick of the litter. I think Klieman's a really good coach. I think they'll figure out a way to win. They won't beat Kansas, but they'll probably beat like West Virginia. You know, they'll probably beat, you know, they might have a shot at like TCU and Texas Tech and Baylor. So it wouldn't shock me. I mean, didn't they beat Oklahoma last year?
Yeah.
They pulled that out of nowhere. So, I mean, who knows? Skylar Thompson, I didn't even realize he was a four-year starter. I actually thought he just started last year. Shows how much attention I've been paying to Kansas State.
Yeah, same. I honestly forgot that Kansas State was even decent last year. It just doesn't make sense. I feel like
they
I was
only
confused.
200 yards in the air, which is incredible because of a passing conference only allowed 200 yards in the air.
Yeah, but they couldn't stop people in the red zone.
Yeah, that'll hurt you.
Yeah. They made one stop inside their own 20-yard line. They gave up 18 touchdowns, 15 field goals in 34 opportunities. That's not good. So if they can clean that up a little bit, maybe they can win some more games. For me, this offense just looks – I mean, you have to essentially – not restart the offense, but you have two returning starters on it. One's your quarterback, so that helps. But without the spring practice, it's not a good spot to be in at this point. So it wouldn't shock me if they win like four games max.
They could also win eight again for all we know.
They could. They could. They really, who knows what's going to happen with this team.
Yeah, I mean, looking at their schedule, I mean, it's pretty winnable. Off the top, they get Buffalo, North Dakota, and Vanderbilt. Should schedule stay the same for this conference? I mean, it's a winnable schedule to get six games. The last time they haven't gone bowling was 2009, it appears, that my book
That's wild.
Reads. Which is crazy because, yeah, I mean, they're a very forgettable team. I mean, they also went on the road and beat Mississippi State last year. I think they'll be all right. Middle of the pack, probably in the conference at best. But like you said, I mean, when it comes to recruiting for them, I mean, they're in the same boat Kansas is really and a few other schools in that area. And they rely heavily on JUCO just because there's so many junior colleges in Kansas, that it's kind of an easy plucking for them. So they rely heavily on that. That was really Bill Snyder's way of building that program. And it works to an extent. I mean, they'll never win a national championship, but they're always consistently, you know, going bowling, obviously. So yeah, I think they'll be middle of the pack. I think should they play a 12 game schedule, I think they'll at least win six games out of that. Maybe a few more here and there. They're typically a team. They beat Oklahoma and Mississippi State, like we mentioned, that will upset a team somewhere down the line and probably also get upset somewhere down the line as well and kind of keep them even keel. I don't think they have enough talent or enough returning talent, at least, to win 9-10 games. But I do think Chris Klieman is a pretty good coach and will continue to build Kansas State into, you know, a perennial 8-9 win team. Down the road. Will we remember that they win 8-9 games every year? No, but they'll get there. All right, moving on to the five-time defending champions. The Oklahoma Sooners, they went 12-2 last year. 16 returning starters, 8 on offense, 8 on defense. Offense ranked 3rd in the country, and defense ranked 38th, which you wouldn't know if the only game you saw was the LSU game last year. Like I said, 5-time consecutive Big 12 champions. The defense did, during the regular season at least, take a big step under Alex Grinch to go up to 38th in the country. Will Oklahoma stumble in Lincoln Riley's first year without a transfer? He's finally got a prospect. Obviously sat here last year with Spencer Rattler. Doesn't have a transfer coming in. He's had Baker Mayfield, then he had Kyler Murray, and then Jalen Hurts. First time running an offense here with a new quarterback that's his own plucking, not from a different school. Had a little bit of playing time last year, but also pretty fresh at the running back spot with Trey Sermon transferring. Kennedy Brooks is back, but some fresh blood behind that. And a lot of turnover at the wide receiver spot. Charleston Rambo is back, but obviously they've had some injury issues here in the preseason. So there's some youth at that position as well.
So Oklahoma this year, it's going to be very interesting because losing CeeDee Lamb hurts a lot. Charleston Rambo is good. Jaden Hazelwood's off of the fall. So there's only one guy with a lot of experience playing at wide receiver for Spencer Rattler, who obviously is assumed to be the starter, actually isn't announced yet. Theo Weiss is a guy that I guess they're looking out for. The offense is going to score points. I mean, that's not going to be any question. It's just going to be how well do they do it? Is it going to be like this past year with Jalen Hurts where they were scoring points, they were a good team, but you could tell that the offense wasn't exactly the same as what it had been under Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield, where those two were just absolutely explosive. The defense obviously took a step forward, but losing Kenneth Murray, I'm not sure if you can just replace a Kenneth Murray on that defense because he was an absolute monster. He was arguably the best linebacker in the country last year. You know, one of the leading tacklers in the country. I don't know what Oklahoma will be this year. I think they'll be good. I think they should be the favorite to win the Big 12, but I'm not sure if they're going to be as solid as they had been the last 3 years.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. I feel like there might be a slight drop off, but I don't think it's going to be a massive one. They return enough players on both sides of the ball that they have a solid base. The biggest question, obviously, is a new quarterback coming in and actually starting taking over without arguably one of the best wide receivers in college football in CeeDee Lamb. I have a good feeling they're still going to be the favorite of the Big 12. I could see their production on offense going down a little bit just because of the inexperience, but I think they're going to rely a little bit more on that defense this year because of that. So I don't think they had too many close games last year, but they're definitely more vulnerable in those close games this year because of the high-powered offense that they've had the past few.
So one thing that's huge is they return 4 offensive linemen. So with a new quarterback having a veteran offensive line like that, that's huge because it gives confidence that you're going to have at least time to throw the ball, especially Rattler, who is the all-time leading passer in Arizona. I think it's Arizona or New Mexico, high school history. So the guy can actually sling it. But the one thing on defense that they made improvements, but they were still 121st in takeaways. So when teams were giving the ball away, they were punting. They weren't actually taking the ball away too often, which hurts because that means you have to go further normally.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just in general replacing production. I mean, on the rushing side of the ball, you have to replace 20 touchdowns from Jalen Hurts. Receiving wise, I mean, CeeDee Lamb well outpaced everybody else, almost doubling up Rambo. So those are big keys. Like you said, though, they return a lot of the offensive line, namely Creed Humphreys, who's a front runner for the Remington Award, and Adrian Ely, a stud. tackle for the team. The defense can get a little bit better again and a little bit more consistent, really. The stats are pretty good most of the way across the board. But if the defense can get a little bit better, I think they'll be all right. Offense will likely be good. I know we have some questions about it right now, but as Spencer Rattler kind of gets into his groove, he should be okay. Obviously, they'll have a few tough tests along the schedule, namely Texas, the rivalry. They go on the road to Ames to play Iowa State, and then they also play on the road against TCU, which we'll get to in a little bit, but I think has a really good defense going into this year. So I do think they're going to slip up somewhere along the way, probably in one of those three spots. I don't think they're going to go undefeated, but I do think they're going to end up being good again. You know, we've watched what Lincoln Riley's done, obviously, with Baker Mayfield, and then with Kyler Murray, and then to take a guy like Jalen Hurts, who, you know, was inconsistent a lot at Alabama, and made him a better passer. I think that bodes well for Rattler, who was a really good passing quarterback in high school and then transitioned and he got the city year and taking the playbook, and so forth. So I do think there will be some growing pains early on as he gets more playing time. But I think as the season progresses, he'll be better. It's going to largely resonate the whole season on the defensive side of the ball. So let's move on to their rival. I guess you can call it that, even though Bedlam has been one-sided for the entire history. The Oklahoma State Cowboys, 8-5 last year. 18 returning starters, 8 on the offensive side, 10 on defense. They ranked 21st in offense last year, 82nd in defense, a trend very common in the Big 12. Will the offseason turmoil surrounding Mike Gundy affect the Cowboys' on-field performance this season?
I'm going to go with no, because there's enough time, I guess you could say, to work on your issues and, you know, build a relationship back up. To me, this is a make or break year for Mike Gundy. If this is going to essentially determine your legacy. You return 21 of your top 22 defenders on your two deep for defense. You return almost everybody on offense. You return Chuba Hubbard and Tylan Wallace, and you return your quarterback Spencer Sanders. You return wide receivers Dylan Stoner and Braden Johnson. You bring in a transfer from LSU, D. Anderson. You're bringing back most of your offensive line. You bring in, you know, Tevin Jenkins, who didn't allow a sack or even a defender to touch the quarterback last year. You lose two offensive linemen, but you bring in a grad transfer from West Virginia, Josh Sills, who was a two-year starter, so he should be there. You have everybody back. You have every single person back for the most part, with the exception of one or two guys. You have an extremely talented team. Chuba Hubbard is arguably the top running back in the country. Tylan Wallace 2 years ago was up for the Biletnikoff. He's healthy again. Spencer Sanders started making progress. This is a make or break year for his legacy. He needs a Big 12 championship this year, to me. I don't think that the offseason drama is going to spill into the season. I think there's enough time to mend that relationship and have the conversations that they all want to have. Chuba Hubbard has been very forefront and been very active with this, you know, obviously doing videos with Mike Gundy. To me, this is the year Mike Gundy needs to make it happen.
Yeah, I can't imagine a year where the expectations are higher for this team. Like you just said, they bring everybody back. There's so much experience on this team. They essentially don't have a reason to lose games. I mean, you could argue Spencer Sanders is only in his second year, but still, he's in his second year. So he looked like a good quarterback last year. You have Heisman dark horse, according to FanDuel, Chuba Hubbard. No, according to FanDuel, all right? He was 18th on the list. I'm going to stand my ground on that. But honestly, a Heisman favorite in actuality. You have Chuba Hubbard, who is one of the most productive running backs in college football. You have no excuses to be losing games this year. Obviously things happen, injuries happen, the game itself has to happen, but the expectations are incredibly high. and I agree with Jake that they're going to get those off the field issues resolved by the start of the season. They have plenty of time. I think everybody's emotions on the situation have calmed down a little bit, to where conversations are still taking place. But some of the more heated conversations are a bit more, calm than they had been, right, as everything was kind of going on, with the protests and everything. So Oklahoma State is in a great spot. And if they don't at least make the conference championship game, I think it's a disappointing season for that team.
That's fair. I do think there is a sense of Gundy on the hot seat, and I don't think anything's going to happen this year just with the COVID stuff. I think it's going to be hard for any team to make any buyouts really across the board. You might see a few, but shy of him just not winning six games, I don't see it happening. But I think with the constant feeling that the upper echelon of that institution always having to apologize for him in the media, there's a sense of tiring that's going on with Gundy. I do think this season, I think the expectation should be 10 wins. The big keys is Spencer Sanders going to be able to cut down on turnovers. That was a big thing that plagued him last year. Obviously, as a young quarterback, that's going to happen. If he can grow and take another step forward, I think that's going to be huge for this offense. With all those weapons kind of coming back, when he did get injured and they replaced him down the stretch, their offense did falter. I think they averaged about 19 points a game in that stretch. So I think he's going to be a big key to this offense. If he can take that next step forward, I do think they have a decent defense coming back. There's a couple playmakers on that side of the ball. And Oklahoma State, I think, is going to contend in this conference. I think they're right up there with Texas and Iowa State as that second tier in this conference moving forward. Looking at their schedule, it is very winnable. They get Texas and Iowa State both at home. They do have to go on the road for Bedlam. And also at TCU, which I think is a hard out. But I do think at least that some of those top teams that are in there with Iowa State and Texas, they both get at home in Stillwater, which is very important for them. But yeah, I mean, there's tons of talent still on that side of the ball. It's a blessing, a huge blessing to see Chuba Hubbard come back for this team after all the offseason stuff. And also just the fact that he was probably a top 50 pick in the draft this past season, should he have stayed. The big question is, the hope is that the Big 12 plays in the fall, because if it moves to the spring, I don't think you're going to see Chuba Hubbard play at that point. So that said, I think the expectation has to be 10 wins, I think, for Oklahoma State this season. Will they get there? Time will tell. Let's go ahead and move on to the TCU Horned Frogs, who went 5-7 last year, a very disappointing season. 9 returning starters, 4 on offense, 5 on defense. Their offense ranked 62nd, which feels a lot higher than what they felt like they were. And their defense was 27th in the country. TCU should have a pretty stout defense led by Ardarius Washington and Trevon Mooring on the in the defensive back category, but can Max Duggan take another step forward and improve this average passing attack?
I'm not sure. I think he's a good quarterback. He's young. I'm not sure it'll be this year, though. He was a pretty highly touted recruit, obviously went to TCU. Threw 10 interceptions, finished 2-4 in the closing stretch. But TCU, it has, for the most part, under Gary Patterson, been kind of vanilla. So I'm not sure that things are really going to change and he is going to be some stud passer, slinging around true Big 12 style. I think he'll be a sufficient quarterback this year. TCU typically makes a bowl game. I would put that at the expectations this year. But just because I say that, that feels like TCU is going to come out of nowhere and, win 9 or 10 games.
Yeah, like just looking at him, nothing about this team really wows me.
They feel so a year away to me.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't feel like they're right there. One thing they definitely need to improve on is their touchdown percentage inside the red zone. Last year they posted a 94% scoring rate inside the red zone, but 21 of those times were it resulted in field goals. So if they can turn that into some touchdowns, that'll help them to get there. But they just feel like a very middle of the road team. I wouldn't expect much more or less out of them this year than last year.
Yeah. If they can get any semblance of offense going on this team, I think they're going to be a problem in this conference, because I love this defense. I think they're going to get much better. I'm a big fan of Trevon Mooring and the secondary. So I definitely think they're going to get back to 7-8 wins at least. It's all going to matter. It's all on Max Dugan's shoulders, really. And taking that step forward. They did bring back Doug Meacham to pair with Sonny Cumbie, which produced Trevon Boykins and that fun offense they had years ago. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how that affects the offensive side of things. But TCU is going to be a hard out. I don't think they're going to be under 500 again this season. All right. Let's go to the Lone Star State with the Texas Longhorns. 8-5 last year, a year after a certain quarterback, Heisman contender Sam Ellinger, announced that this program was back. And results suggest otherwise. Offensively, though, they did rank 14th in the country. Defensively, though, they were 97th. 14 returning starters, 7 on both sides of the ball. And Mike Yurchich is in as offensive coordinator and Chris Ash in at defensive coordinator. Two guys that you guys may be familiar with as former Ohio State assistants. And my question, though, is can Texas finally upend rival Oklahoma and win the Big 12 championship to solidify maybe that they are back?
I have that clip from the Sugar Bowl saved in my favorites on my phone. I have the 5-second clip and I send it to people all the time. Just a little side note. I love sending to people. You say so, we know. Go ahead.
It's so cringy. It like is. Not that he's saying that they're back, but just the way he says it is just like
Longhorn Nation, we're back.
Yeah, it's, every time I watch it, like I'm embarrassed. Like, yep. I have no care in the world for this program, but I'm just like, oh God. Like, I feel like I gotta take a shower after I watch it. Like, it's just not good.
So Yurchich, I don't even know much about Yurchich, even though he was at Ohio State, because he actually didn't do that much based off of everything I read. Is that he coached quarterbacks, but he was coaching Justin Fields. So, like, dude was already talented. So I don't really know how much in a Ryan Day's trade is a quarterback coach. So nobody actually knows how much he was involved, which is why people think he left, because he really didn't get much say, because they already had Kevin Wilson, who was an offensive coordinator. They brought in Mike Yurchich, who was the passing game coordinator, and Ryan Day was an offensive coordinator and quarterback coach by trade. So I don't know what his impact was, which is why I'm guessing he left and they went with a young guy. He did well for the most part at Oklahoma State. Should help. Ellinger, I mean, he loses his two top receivers with Colin Johnson and Devin Duvernay. They do bring in Tariq Black, which I think is a very interesting piece. When at Michigan, he was a big play guy when he could stay on the field, but he wasn't healthy too much. I think the offense will be good. You know, they bring back their two top running backs, Keontae Ingram and Rashawn Johnson. They bring in 5-star freshman Bijan Robinson. So they should be able to move the ball. I mean, Sam Ellinger is probably going to run the ball, you know, a lot again and score a lot of points on the ground. I'm not sure this is the year that they beat Oklahoma, though, just because I don't think Sam Ellinger is the best quarterback. He's JT Barrett of Texas. JT Barrett has limitations. I think Sam Ellinger is a little bit better throwing the ball. I think JT Barrett was better running the ball. But again, they were both limited in a Big 12 where you have to score a lot of points. They do well, but I don't think it's enough to outscore an Oklahoma team that even with some new guys out there, they're still loaded on offense.
Yeah, I mean, this team can move the ball, but they're not back. That's where we're going to start with that. They're still not back. I mean, Sam Ellinger, people think he's a lot better than he is. I just don't. There's no wow factor in him like there has been with Jalen Hurts and Kyler Murray or Baker Mayfield. Like, I feel like people want to put him in that same category, but he's just not there at all. I mean, having Keontae Ingram back is pretty big for them. He was very productive last year. But I just, their offense isn't the team that wins the games in the big moments, I don't think. Like, they lost to LSU last year. They probably kept LSU as close as anybody else at home. But I don't think, if I remember right, that game wasn't super close. They just kind of pulled back some points at the end of the game. I don't see them being, I just don't see them winning the Big 12 this year. I don't think it's their year. I still don't think they're back.
Yeah, I think the problem is going to be big at wide receiver, and replacing Colin Johnson, who's a 6'6 monster, and Devin Duvernay, who's a speed threat on the inside, who just didn't drop passes. Going back to Ellinger, though, this is going to be sacrilege. I'm not saying he's as good as him, but Sam Ellinger just reminds me of Tebow in the sense that when I watched Tim Tebow, I was never like, man, this guy's exciting. But there was a consistency. Like, he could run the ball. Anytime he'd run the ball, he was going to get the yards he needed, which is what Ellinger does. He's not a speed demon. And throwing the ball, he's going to do what he can, but he's not, you know, going to light up defenses with his arm, which is, again, Ellinger. Like, there's a reason why he's not projected as a first-round quarterback next year, and it's because he's not the most consistent passer. But he's a guy that's going to win Texas games, win games for Texas, at least, I should say, that maybe they shouldn't. Not saying he's going to like, not saying he's as good as Tebow was. Obviously that's not the case, but his playing style is very similar, I think, to him, where, you know, you said he's not a Jalen Hurts. That's correct. Just Jalen Hurts was much faster. He was going to be able to break longer runs. Ellinger's just a tough, hard-nosed runner. He's going to pick up, if you need 4 yards, he's going to pick up 5. You know, he's not going to pick up 10, so on and so forth. So in that sense, I do like him. I think he's a traditional college quarterback who maybe at the NFL level can be a solid backup and play here and there. So I think he's good for Texas, but I do think there is a trouble to that team on offense in terms of missing some key pieces, and they definitely need to up the running game a bit, I think, at least at the running back position. For them to compete with Oklahoma, I don't think they will. To be quite honest with you, spoiler alert, I don't even have them playing in the Big 12 title game. But I do think they're going to win probably 8-9 games again. The defensive line, I think, needs to step up. They're very inconsistent. If they can get better play there, they lose a brilliant safety in Brandon Jones to the NFL draft. They do return Caden Stearns and B.J. Foster, I believe, going into this season. But I think there's a lot of what-ifs going on this roster that's a little bit troublesome, especially in a year where you want everything to line up for Sam Ellinger's final season, but I just don't think it's there with how many key pieces they're replacing across the board. So I expect Texas to probably be better than 8-5. Probably 9, maybe 10 wins at most, but I don't think they're going to beat Oklahoma for the Big 12 title this year, to be quite honest with you. All right, staying in state, let's go to the Texas Tech Red Raiders. They went 8-4 last year. They returned 15 starters, 8 on offense, 7 on defense. This is the widest array of offense to defense there is in this conference. Their offense was 11th in the country last year. Their defense was 127th. quite awful. Texas Tech did lose 4 of those 8 games by 3 points or fewer. My question really is, how high can Texas Tech get with a healthy Alan Bowman leading the charge?
Well, the defense still sucks, so that's going to be an issue. I think they should win more games. I think some of the 3-point games you could look to flip. I think they should be competing for a bowl game, but with a bad defense in the Big 12, you're at mercy of the rest of the conference. You know, they have some talent there. Bowman, you know, should help lead the charge, but I'm just not sure they have enough to really push them into the upper half of the conference.
Yeah, I mean, the Big 12 is not known for defense. This team is just even worse at it. They were 0-4 in games decided by a single possession last season, and they gave up 35 plays of 30 yards or more, which was the highest percentage in the nation, with a rate of 8.68%. That's got to just be cleaned up a lot if you want to compete in these big games, or in any games, really. They 4 of their losses came by a single possession. The other 4 were not close. So they just have so much work to do on defense. Their offense is still going to produce. They bring back TJ Vasher and Alan Bowman. I think both of them combined will give them solid production. But if they can't get it cleaned up on defense, they are not going to have a fun season.
Yeah, I like Alan Bowman a good amount. I think he's definitely a step up from what they've had in terms of the backups who've been in for him in certain periods when Bowman's been out, especially last year. I do think if you get a full season of him, I think you're going to get 6 wins along the line. The defense can only go up from where they are, really. And I think they'll make at least a small step up from where they were. But yeah, I mean, when you lose 4 out of the 8 games by 3 points or fewer, a few of those were ones where Bowman wasn't in. I think he can be the difference in a few of those games. Looking at the schedule, obviously the Arizona game is out the window with the Pac-12 shifting to conference only. But UTEP, Alabama State, they get West Virginia at home. They get Baylor at home. They get Kansas at home. There's, you know, 5 games right there, I think, that are winnable. If they can upset one other team, or depending on if they reschedule and get another FCS team in there, I think that Texas Tech can get to 6 wins here. I think they're on the up and up. It's going to be hard to win more than 7 games this season, with the defense being where they are, unless they take a dramatic step forward. But yeah, I mean, you know, when you play that many close games, I think a lot of that is down to luck. And a lot of that's also down to just how good your defense is. And if the defense has improved to hold some teams there late in games, or the offense can, you know, drive down the field and win those games, that's the difference between a 4-8 season and, you know, a 6-6 season or so. So 7-5, whatever. So I think Texas Tech is going to take a step forward, and I think they'll be close to bowl eligibility at least. And lastly, West Virginia Mountaineers, 5-7 last year. They have 12 returning starters, 7 on offense, 5 on defense. Their offense ranked 119th in the country last year, and their defense ranked 74th. Will the Mountaineers rebound to a 500 record in year 2 under Neil Brown?
I'm not so confident. I think West Virginia is going to be one of the bottom 2 or 3 teams in this division, or in the conference. They're not even sure who their quarterback's going to be. Jared Dodge replaced Austin Kendall in the fourth quarter when they lost to Texas Tech early in the year, halfway through the year. Dodge ended up sticking with the job. But they'll have a battle again to see who will start this fall. Kendall wasn't the best, so depending on who ends up winning this job, I'm not super confident in it. They were also 128th in rushing last year, averaging only 73 yards a game. And their leading rusher is back, who only had 367 yards last year. They have to replace both their tackles. The inside of the line is back. I'm just not sure if they're going to score some points. That's the biggest concern for me. In the Big 12, where you have to score points, and if you are struggling to move the ball, it does not bode well.
Yeah, they were a super young team last year. I think they replaced a lot of their starters. So they're getting a little older. They should have some experience. Their run game was absolutely atrocious. They combined for 7 rushing touchdowns. They averaged 47.71 rushing attempts per touchdown run, which was 129th overall and worst among Power 5 teams last year. So that's one area they have to get better at. If you want to take any pressure off of 2 quarterbacks that are not so sure of themselves, not overly great, like, you have to have a running game to help them out. If they can get that puts them in a little bit better spot. That being said, I don't have very high expectations for them. I think, like you guys said, they're going to be one of the lower teams in the conference. They're probably going to be at the bottom, but they have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, this is a team that is, it could be anywhere from the middle of the pack to the bottom of the conference. So Jarrett Diggie took over. He did go 2-1 at the end of the season, after replacing Kendall. They did upset Kansas State in there. And they do have a lot of, they have talent at the wide receiver position. A lot of guys who got decent amount of playing time last year, which is a plus. Darius Stills at the newest tackle position is a stud as well. A Big 12 selection there. Or an all Big 12 selection there. So yeah, I mean, this is one of those teams that is going to be real hit or miss. The schedule isn't super easy. The Maryland game is obviously off the schedule. Right now, they still have to play Florida State to kick off the year, which I don't think they'll win that game. But they get at least, I think, both the Kansas schools travel to West Virginia there. But outside of that, I mean, their schedule isn't super easy, depending on what they end up doing to replace Maryland. If they do play a full slate, will be interesting to see. But I don't know that they'll get the 500 again this season, just based on that schedule and a real toss-up at the quarterback position and kind of across the board. Like Gibble said, they were a young team last year. I think Neil Brown will get them there, but this might take another season and another full off season, a regular off season, I guess I should say, to get West Virginia back there. All right. That is the Big 12. So what do you guys think about this conference? Who do you think is going to be playing for the Big 12 championship?
I have Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, with Oklahoma inevitably winning once again.
I have the same matchup, but I'm going to give the edge to Oklahoma State.
I mean, do I have to say it? I think it's going to be Oklahoma over Iowa State. Looking at the teams across the board, when it comes to breaking the tie, really, for me, it comes down to talent at the quarterback position, which is where I'm looking at Texas, Iowa State, Oklahoma State. In that second tier of the conference, TCU as well, I'd throw them in there. And I think it comes down to Purdy. I like him a little bit better than Ellinger, so I will put them there. I think they play in Ames this year. which bodes well for Iowa State once they get to that point in the season. So, but I don't think they have enough talent to beat Oklahoma, even on a straight up field. I'll admit that. I'll be the big man here. And I mean, we're, I guess, not all in agreement. Intern Gibble took Oklahoma State here. That's my prediction there for the Big 12. Let's go ahead and shift on over to Conference USA for a second, just to touch on a few things. Won't take too long. Not going to go team by team here. Don't want to take up a ton of time. What we're going to do is just talk about a few key things going on at the conference. The first one, what will Florida Atlantic look like after the departure of Lane Kiffin and the hiring of Willie Taggart in year one?
Dumpster fire. Just pour some gasoline on it, light on fire.
What do you mean, man? They just got a 4-star quarterbacker, Kurt.
Yeah, Willie Taggart's the head coach. So, you know, anything Willie Taggart touches turns to fire. So, you know, might as well just tear it down, rebuild in 2 years, you know, that kind of stuff. I have no confidence in Willie Taggart doing anything. So even if he does anything this year, I'm just not giving him the benefit of the doubt this year.
Yeah, you had me at Willie Taggart. My confidence in them is just nah. I think they're going to drop off for sure. Yeah. Not much more beyond that.
I do think they're obviously going to take a step back this year from where they were last. I mean, they went 11-3 last year and won the conference. I think this is, in hindsight, you know, I don't hate Willie Taggart as much as you guys do. I think this is the perfect spot for him. He can recruit the area well. Obviously, he just got a 4-star quarterback, which is pretty amazing. Deion Sanders' son.
ESPN has him as a top 50 player. Now, ESPN's recruiting service sucks, but they have him as a top 50 player.
Yeah, we only go by 24/7 here on this podcast, so we will delete that in post-production. but yeah, I mean, I think it's a good spot for him in terms of it's not a big school. There's obviously they want to win games. And I think this is a spot that Willie Taggart over the years can recruit and win in a small conference like this. I do think he was way overmatched going to a Power 5 school, let alone, one of Florida State's, you know, history. So I think this is a good spot for him. In the long run, is he going to be as successful as Lane Kiffin? It's hard to say. Probably not. Lane Kiffin was very successful there in a couple of years, and boosted himself back to a Power 5 school in Ole Miss. But yeah, I mean, he's going to recruit the area well. He obviously has the connection still from being at Florida State and recruiting there when he was at South Florida and beyond. So that'll be interesting, but yeah, they're definitely going to take a step back this year. Spoiler alert, I don't have them winning the Power 5 or the Conference USA, I should say, this season. Second question, how wide open is Conference USA this year with Lane Kiffin now gone?
You throw a rock in the ocean and wherever it lands is who's going to win. That's about the confidence I have in my pick that I'm going to make to win this conference. I don't know because Conference USA, it's like the Southern version of the MAC, that teams, the turnover with coaches and players and transfers, you know, a couple players can change the entire conference and the complexion of it, because you get a couple transfers from guys that were at Power 5, they come down, maybe just weren't getting the playing time. They can be studs at these conferences and these schools. So just like how the MAC is, you know, throw a dart and somebody's going to win unless, you know, there's a Jordan Lynch playing, you just never know. You know, Western Kentucky, UAB has been very consistent. Bill Clark has been very good since UAB has returned from their 1-year hiatus. So I think UAB is going to be very good. But again, who knows? One or two injuries can also change this conference completely.
Yeah, I mean, this conference, I feel like it's got a different team each year that feels like it's kind of taking over. whether UAB's relatively stayed close to the top, same with Western Kentucky, but Old Dominion could surprise us this year with Ricky Rainey taking over.
They maybe won one game last year. Shut up.
Probably not. Listen. Probably not. I'm probably wrong. Anyway.
Yeah, but they beat Virginia Tech a couple years ago.
That they did.
They beat Norfolk State. Virginia Tech took them to
the woodshed last year.
Yeah. I mean, it's they could just steal a game. That's pretty much their ceiling this year.
You just said they could surprise people.
They could. Who knows?
Nothing he says makes any sense.
It really doesn't, does it? I mean, it's just a crapshoot in this conference. That's pretty much what it boils down to. I have no idea who's going to come out on top.
Yeah, I think looking at it, I think there's six teams overall that could win this conference, three from each. Marshall, Western Kentucky, and Florida Atlantic in the East. UAB, Southern Miss, and Louisiana Tech in the West.
Let me tell you why Marshall might not. It flew under the radar, but their starting quarterback, Isaiah Green, entered the portal on Thursday.
That did fly under the radar. I did not know that.
I found that out while recording today.
That's going to be interesting to keep an eye on then. Because he is probably...
He started 23 of the last 24 games for Marshall.
Yeah. They still have Brendan Knox at running back and probably one of the deeper rosters across the board of the conference. Decent quarterback, but yeah, that's something to keep an eye on for sure. And lastly, my third question for the conference, when he inevitably becomes the third coach in this conference to upset Miami this season, will Bill Clark finally get a Power 5 job?
No. I don't know why he's being blackballed, but somehow he'll not get a Power 5 job. I don't know why. It doesn't make any sense. Maybe he just loves UAB because he got the program restarted. But nobody will throw him enough money yet.
Yeah, I got nothing to add to that.
Yeah, I mean, the guy just is doing everything. I mean, he died with the team. He resurrected the team. He is Jesus Christ of football to resurrect. I mean,
maybe he just doesn't want to leave because he is like so highly regarded there. Like, there's no reason to leave. Like, you're in such a great spot. Like,
I had heard that, but it's like, I think maybe it depends on where the school is. Maybe he has been reached by smaller teams in Power 5 schools and hasn't wanted to talk. But yeah, I mean, one of these years, I just feel like somebody's got to give him a call. Because, I mean, he's one of those guys that it's like he's not winning 10, 11 games every year, but like he's doing so much with so little. And especially a team that was on the brink of death, then went to death, then was reborn, and has been really good ever since again. Basically did not stop after, you know, being canceled there for a few years. He is the one true rebirth of what cancer culture, in a sense, if you want to look at it that way, can do. I mean, he came back from the brink after that school called it quits. They brought it back up. But that game will go a long way, I think, depending on how they perform. Should the ACC keep that keep full schedules and Miami plays UAB this year, could go a long way, regardless of how the outcome is, to whether he ends up getting a job in the future. I do think, as I've said, I don't think there's going to be a ton of teams firing coaches after the season with no fans in the stands, but it might start to perk up some people in terms of that. Lastly, championship game, who do you guys think is going to end up winning the conference?
Go to Gibble, because I originally was going to have Marshall, and with their quarterback transferring, I don't know who I'm picking, so we're going to ad-lib this.
I'm going to take UAB over the Hilltoppers because Dragons breathe fire, and Bill Clark is a great head coach. That's all we got.
Well, then... You know, I hate this because whatever. Western Kentucky over UAB. Do I have a reason? No, because I don't have time to come up with a reason.
Damn. All right. So we all have the same teams in some format. I am taking the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers and their lovely, magnificent mascot, Big Red, over UAB as well. Mainly my selection here is because it's my two favorite teams in the conference. And yeah, I mean, that's all I really have. I'm going to pick Western Kentucky to win this conference almost every year. I do think they have a really good standout defensive end, D'Angelo Malone. And I think that defense is going to be pretty good for the Hilltoppers. And also just how do you expect to win games when Big Red's on the other sideline, just staring you down with those weird ass eyes and that weird mouth. So yeah, give me the Hilltoppers here. I'll rep for my squad. That is our Conference USA preview. Jake, I will send it over to you for an ad read.
So, as you all know, Smack Apparel is the leading industry in college and professional sports t-shirts, hoodies, tank tops, onesies, and more. Their funny shirts are often seen on big screens because they stand out from boring sports gear that other fans choose to wear. From their college shirts to professional apparel, they have no shortage of creative sports gear for your favorite team. Whether you're looking for the perfect shirt for your big game, or if you want to find a great birthday gift or holiday gift for the sports fan in your life, choose Smack Apparel and use promo code WALKON for 20% off your next order. Listener questions, because I thought it was Big Ten, so we were going to have a lot of Big Ten questions when it was the wrong time, but luckily we got a couple Big 12 questions at the last minute. So this one comes from B Blank. Who will have the best record of the second-year coaches in the Big 12? So from what I can remember, it's Neil Brown, Kleiman, and Les Miles. Am I missing any of second-year head coaches?
I don't think so.
So out of those three, which will have the best record?
Kleiman. Just because I think based on where the three were last year, Kleiman would have to decrease his win total quite a bit more to reach where the other guys are. And I already said it. I don't know how many games Kansas is going to win. And I don't expect West Virginia to make a ton of headway. Matt Wells, Texas Tech.
Oh yeah. Matt Wells. So,
as the other one. So looking at that, even with Matt Wells in there, I think it's Kleiman probably. We joked with Kansas State talking about him. They win games and you forget about them, but they're always going bowling. So yeah, I think Kansas State probably ends up having the most wins.
Yeah, going based off win total, I'd agree K-State. Out of the others, who I think could improve the most, I feel like Texas Tech and Matt Wells are probably in the best position to do it. But again, they just need to clean up that defense. But I don't know that the others are in quite as good of a spot to improve as Texas Tech.
Les Miles, duh. He also asked another question. Can Kansas State power run offense sustain in the Big 12?
It's boring.
I mean, it has for decades. So I don't see it coming to an end anytime soon. Every so often Kansas State might have a team that challenges for the Big 12 championship every 8-9 years or something like that. Long term, but yeah, I mean, it'll sustain. It has for a long time, and it likely will for quite a few years down the road. It's college football. It's not the NFL. So, I mean, you can pretty much have whatever offense you've won, and it can succeed as long as the coaching and the kids you're bringing in are acclimated to that system. Unless you're running a Big Ten offense with Florida athletes. But in a state like Kansas, yeah, sure. I think the power run offense can sustain in the Big 12. I mean, hell, they just beat Oklahoma last year, so hard to say it won't.
Any thoughts on that, Gibble?
No, you pretty much got it covered.
So the last one here is from RP Texan. We kind of covered this a little bit, but so he says, as a Texas Tech lover slash realist, Tech has a lot of frontline talent, and Wells is working on the depth, especially with transfers. I know Tech isn't winning the Big 12 this year, but could realistically they win 9 games in a full season? How could that be wrong? Thanks.
Well, their defense stinks.
Well, their defense was worse than Kansas's last year, so that's a start. Here's how you're wrong. So let's go to an 11. Let's modify this. Arizona's off the table. We don't know whether they will replace that game or what's going to happen yet there. So let's knock it to 11-game schedule, and let's knock your question to 8 games for this season. Because
they probably beat Arizona. Arizona sucks, too.
It's hard to say.
We'll give them the benefit of the doubt, but so we'll knock it to 8 games anyways.
Well, yeah, we'll knock it to 8 games because the game's not – so 8 out of 11 games, you know, 3 losses, whatever. Looking at the schedule, I only see 7 wins if everything breaks correctly, to be quite honest with you. UTEP, Alabama State, I think they lose at Iowa State. I think that maybe they beat West Virginia, Baylor, and Texas at home if somehow everything falls correctly there. At Oklahoma State, don't like that. Chalk an L up there. At Kansas State, I guess you can chalk that as a possible victory. They lost by 3 at home last year to Kansas State. At home against Kansas, I'll give them a W there and a best case scenario. At TCU, don't see it. At home against Oklahoma, still don't see it. So 7 games at most without Arizona on schedule and calling it 8. So, yeah, I don't see it this year. I think the defense would have to take some tremendous strides to get there. So that's how you're wrong. I mean, look, always rooting for the Red Raiders to do good, but I don't see 8 or 9 wins this season.
To me, Oklahoma State, Texas, and Iowa State are games where I'd put at least 80% chance they lose. And after that, that's 4 games already right there. If you're playing 11 games scheduled, 7. Kansas State, Baylor, and TCU are not easy games by any means. So there's 7 tough games where I think they have no better than a 50% chance to win. And just the odds aren't in their favor to win to win a majority of those games.
Yeah, I mean, they might be able to put up a lot of points, but again, it just goes back to their defense. If they can't make any stops, you can't expect to win 8 games when you can't make stops. I mean, granted, they won 4 last year with 4 losses coming from 1 score or less. So, I mean, I guess if you want to say that those games just flip the other way, maybe, but it just feels like a too big of a reach for them this year.
I agree. And even if they do manage to beat, TCU or Baylor, or Texas or, one of those other schools, they're not going to beat Oklahoma State. They're not going to beat Oklahoma. And I really don't like their chances against Iowa State or Texas. So winning 8 games in that situation is just out of the realm. Even if they win all the other ones, they're still 7-4, which is a good season. It's a step forward for Matt Wells, but I just still don't see them going 7-4.
This is a team that could also use their fans as a backup in those games. This is in those big games. I mean, they have Oklahoma, Texas, Baylor at home. If they have fans in the stands, that changes the environment, but if they're just straight up playing talent versus talent, then you're going to see them just be not there in those games, I think.
Yep. That's all we have for question-wise.
All right. Join us next week, everybody, for our Big Ten MAC preview episode. Don't forget to follow us on social media at Walk On Red Shirts on Twitter. Go ahead and check out our YouTube channel, Walk On Red Shirts Podcast. Go back and check out some of the half hour huddles that Jake had this spring / early summer. And we will see you guys next week. Thanks for tuning in. Have a good one.